When he had eaten and returned from his rounds, the Lord put away his bowl and cloak, washed his feet, and sat down on the seat arranged for him. When for the first time Buddhist sutras were translated into Western languages, the translators were a little bit puzzled. Why this continuous repetition? It goes on and on like that. Again it will be. Again this. Why these small things are related? They could not understand it. They thought this is repetitive, that this is a very unnecessary repetition, not needed at all. What is the point of it all? But they missed. What Ananda is saying is that Buddha pays attention to small things as much as to big things. For a Buddha, there is nothing small and nothing big, one thing. When he takes his bowl, he is as respectful to the bowl as he will be respectful to any god. When he puts his cloak or puts his dress on, he is so mindful. He is absolutely alert. He is not mechanical. When you put your dress on, you are mechanical. You know mechanically how to put it, so what is the point of paying attention to it? Your mind goes on moving into 1,000 directions and you take a shower, but you are very disrespectful to the shower. You have not been there. You have been somewhere else. You eat, but you are disrespectful to the food. You are not there. You simply go on swallowing the food inside you. You go on doing your things habitually, mechanically. When Buddha does a thing, he is utterly there. He is nowhere else. When he had eaten and returned from his round, the Lord put away his bowl and cloak, washed his feet, and sat down on the seat arranged for him, crossing his legs, holding his body upright, and mindfully fixing his attention in front of him. These minute details are worth relating because they bring the quality of Buddhahood. Each moment he lives in awareness. What he is doing is irrelevant. Each moment he pours his attention into whatsoever he is doing. When he makes a gesture, he is totally the gesture. When he smiles, he is totally the smile. When he talks, he is totally his words. And when he is silent, he is totally silent. To watch a Buddha is a blessing in itself. How he walks, how he sits, how he makes gestures, how he looks at you. Each moment is a radiant moment of awareness. That's why Ananda reports, there must have been great silence when Buddha came, arranged his dress, washed his feet, sat on the seat arranged for him, sat upright, then focused his whole attention in front of him. What is this? Fixing your attention in front of yourself. That is a special Buddhist method called Anapan Sati Yoga, mindfulness of breath coming in and breath going out. That is the meaning of focusing your attention in front. When Buddha is doing something, for example, dressing, then he is attentive of that act. When he is walking, he is attentive of walking. When he is not doing anything, then he is attentive of breath coming in and breath going out. But he is attentive. Even while he is asleep, he is attentive. Ananda has asked Buddha once. For 10 years he lived with Buddha, and he was surprised that he remains in the same posture the whole night. Wherever he puts his hand, he keeps it there the whole night. He must have looked many times, must have sneaked in the night. It was worth how the Buddha sleeps. And he was surprised and puzzled that he keeps the same posture, the whole night. He could not hold his curiosity. One day he said, "It is not right for me to get up in the night and look at you. I should not do such a thing, but I am curious about you. And I am puzzled. You remain in the same posture. Do you sleep? Are you continue your awareness?" And Buddha said, "Sleep happens in the body. I remain alert of it. Now the sleep is coming. Now it has come. Now it has settled. Now the body is relaxed, that the limbs are relaxed. But I keep burning my awareness bright." Meditation is a 24-hour thing. It is not that you do once a day and you are finished with it. It has to become your flavor. It has to become your climate. It should surround you wherever you are, whatsoever you are doing. And mindfully fixing his attention in front of him, he said, then many monks approached to where the Lord was, saluted his feet with their heads, thrice walked round him to the right and sat down on one side. To ask a question to a Buddha needs a certain attitude. Only then you will receive the answer. Not that Buddha will not give the answer. You can ask very disrespectfully, Buddha will give the answer, but you will not receive it. So it is not a question that only when you are respectful, then Buddha will give the answer. Buddha will give the answer anyway. But if you are not very respectful, very humble, receptive, feminine, you will miss it. How you ask the question determines whether you will be able to receive the answer or not. How you ask, in what mood, are you receptive? Are you just curious? Are you asking the question out of your accumulated knowledge? Or is your question innocent? Are you asking just to test whether this man knows or not? Are you asking from a state of knowledge or from a state of not knowing? Are you humble, surrendered? Are you ready to receive the gift if it is given to you? Will you be open? Will you welcome it? Will you take it to your heart? Will you allow it to become a seed in your heart? To ask a question to a Buddha is not to ask a question to a professor. It needs a certain quality in you. then only you will be benefited by it. Then many monks approached to where the Lord was, saluted his feet with their heads, thrice walked round him to the right, and sat down on one side. Walking thrice is symbolic about the three bodies. The first round is for the physical body, the body that we can see, which is available to the senses. The physical body of the Buddha is also beautiful. It is the shrine where God abides. So the first round is a salutation for the first body, the physical body. The second round is for the bliss body, second body. And the third round is for the Buddha body, the truth body. These three rounds are symbolic of something else too. In Buddhism, there are three shelters, three refuges. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Dhamma. These three rounds are symbolic of them too. When a person comes to Buddha to ask anything, he has to take refuge. He has to have this state of mind that I am falling in tune with Buddha, that I am ready to vibrate in the same wavelength. I take refuge in the Buddha that you are my shelter, that I come to you as a disciple, that I come to you knowing that I don't know, that I come to you in innocence, that I bow down to you, that I recognize you that you know and I don't know. So I am ready to receive whatsoever you think I am worthy to be given to. I take refuge in the Sangha, in the commune, because one Buddha is only a representative of all the Buddhas of the past and the future. One Buddha is a door to all the Buddhas. You can call the Buddhas the Christ or the Krishnas, it doesn't make any difference. These are different names given by different traditions. So the first refuge is in this Buddha who is just in front of you. The second refuge is to all the Buddhas, the Sangha, the commune of the Buddhas, past, present, future. And the third refuge is in the Dhamma, that essential being that makes a man a Buddha, that art of awakening is Dhamma, the religion. At that time, the Venerable Subhuti came to that assembly and sat down. One of the great disciples of Buddha is Subhuti. Then he rose from his seat, says Ananda, and again he repeats the whole thing, because Subhuti is also no ordinary man. He is almost a Buddha, just on the verge of it. Any moment he is going to become a Buddha. So Ananda repeats again. Then he rose from his seat, put his upper robe over one soldier, placed his right knee on the ground, bent forth his folded hands towards the Lord, and said to the Lord, "It is wonderful, O Lord, it is exceedingly wonderful. O Valgan, how much the Bodhisattvas, the great beings, have been helped with the greatest help by the Tathagata. How then, O Lord, should one who has set out in the Bodhisattva vehicle stand? How progress? How control the thoughts? Subhuti is almost close to Buddhahood. He is a Bodhisattva. Bodhisattva means who is ready to become a Buddha. Who has come almost close to it, one step more, and he will become a Buddha. Bodhisattva means Bodhi essence, Bodhi being, ready, 99 degrees, and on the 100 degree he will evaporate. But a Bodhisattva is one who tries to remain a little longer at the 99 degree so that he can help people out of his compassion. Because once he has jumped the 100 degree, he has gone beyond. Gate, gate, para gate, para samgate, bodhi swaha. Then he has gone and gone beyond and beyond. Then it will be very difficult to make contact to the people who live on this source. The greatest help is possible from those who are at the 99 degree. Why? Because they are still not enlightened. They know the ways of the people who are unenlightened. They know the language of the people who are unenlightened. They are yet with them. And yet, in another sense, 99% they have gone beyond. That 1% keeps them linked, bridged. So a Bodhisattva is one who is close to Buddhahood but is trying to remain on this shore a little more so that he can help people. He has arrived. He would like to share his arrival. He has known. He would like to share what he is known. Others are stumbling in darkness. He would like to share his light with them, his love with them. Subhuti is a Bodhisattva. Ananda reports about him also in the same way as he reports about Buddha. Then he rose from his seat. Just imagine, visualize a Bodhisattva rising. He is utter awareness. He is not just rising like a robot. Each breath is known, fully known. Nothing passes unknown. He is watchful. What the Catholic tradition says, recollectedness. That's what Buddhists call sammasati, right mindfulness. Mindfulness or recollection, to be recollected, to live recollectedly, sammasati. Not to do a single act unconsciously. He rose from his seat, put his upper robe over one shoulder, placed his right knee on the ground, bent forth his folded hands towards the Lord and said to the Lord. And remember, even a Bodhisattva who has come very close to be a Buddha bows down to the Buddha in utter gratitude. It is wonderful, O Lord. It is exceedingly wonderful. O well gone, Well gone means one who has gone to the other source. Subhuti is on this source. Buddha is on that source. Subhuti has come to that understanding, he can see the other source. He can see Buddha on the other source. Oh, well gone. This word well gone has many meanings. One has reached to the other source. Another, one who has reached to the ultimate of meditation. Buddha has said that there are 8 steps towards ultimate meditation. One who has reached to the 8th is called well gone. But it is the same. One who has reached samadhi, the ultimate samadhi, he has gone to the other source. He is no more. That is what is meant by well gone. Gone, utterly gone. He is no more. He is just an emptiness. The self has disappeared, evaporated. Oh, well gone. It is wonderful. It is exceedingly wonderful. How much the bodhisattvas, the great beings, have been helped with the greatest help by the Tathagata. Tathagata is the Buddhist word, which means well gone. Subhuti says, how much help has been given. How much, it is wonderful, it is exceedingly wonderful, it is unbelievable. How much you have given to us. And you go on giving. And we don't even deserve it. Wonderful. Oh Lord, it is exceedingly wonderful. Oh well gone, how much the bodhisattvas, the great beings, have been helped by the Tathagata. How then, oh Lord, should one who has set out in the bodhisattva vehicle, one who has decided to remain on this shore a little longer to help people, how he should stand, how progress, how control the thoughts? What he is asking. He is asking a question which may not be relevant to many of you. Because it becomes relevant only when you have become a bodhisattva. But someday or other, you will be becoming bodhisattvas. Someday or other, the question will be relevant. It is better to think about it. It is better to meditate over it. He says, those who have decided to be bodhisattvas, how they should stand. He is saying the attraction of the other source is so much. The pull of the other source is so much. How they should stand on this source. We would like to help people. But how? The pull is such, the magnetic pull is such, the other source is calling. So teach us how we can stand here, how we can become again rooted on this shore. We have become uprooted. In this world we don't have any roots. 99% roots are gone. Just think of a tree. 99% roots are gone. Only 1% roots are there. The tree is asking, how should I stand now? I am going to fall. And I understand that if I can stay a little longer, I will be of immense help to people and they need it. I was in need, you helped me, now others are in need, I should help. That is the only way a disciple can pay his debt to the master. There is no other way. The master has helped you. The master needs no help. How to pay the debt? What to do? The only way to do is help somebody who is still stumbling, groping in the dark. Do whatsoever the master has done for you to others, and you have paid your debt. He asks how to stand. It is difficult. It is almost impossible. And how to progress? How to start helping people, because that too is difficult. Now we understand their miseries are all false. Now we understand that they are suffering just nightmares. Their miseries are not true. Now we know they are afraid only of a rope, thinking that it is a snake. Now it is very difficult to help these people. It is ridiculous. And we know that they need help because we know our own past. We were trembling, crying, screaming. We know how much we have suffered. Although now we know that all suffering was just like a dream. It was illusory. It was maya. Just think, if you know that the other person is just talking nonsense, that he has no wounds. Once a man was brought to me. He had got the idea somehow that two flies have entered into his stomach because he sleeps with open mouth. And they go on revolving in the stomach naturally. If they have entered, they will revolve. And he was continuously worried. And he was not even able to sit in one posture. He will move to this side and that, and he will say, they have gone to this side, and they have gone to this side. He was almost mad. Now, he has been to all the doctors, and nobody was of any help. And they all laughed. They said, you are just imagining. But just to say to a person that you are imagining your misery is not of much help. Because he is suffering. It may be imaginary to you, but to him, it makes no difference whether the suffering is imaginary or real. He is suffering all the same. What you call it makes no difference. I touched his stomach and then said, yes, they are there. He was very happy. He touched my feet. He said, you are the only man. I have been to many doctors and physicians and Ayurvedic and the allopathic and the homeopathic, and they are all fools. And they go on insisting one thing. If you don't have any medicine, simply say that you don't have any medicine. But why you go on saying that I am imagining? Now here you are. Can't you see us? Perfectly, I can see they are there. I deal in such problems. So you have come to the right person. This is my whole work. I deal in such problems which don't exist really. But I am an expert in dealing with problems which are not. I said, you just lie down and close your eyes. I will have to blindfold you. And I will take, and you open the mouth. And I will call them. A great mantra is needed. He was very happy. He said, this is how it should be done. I blindfolded him, told him to open his mouth, and he was lying there very happy, waiting for the flies to come. And I rushed into the house to find two flies. It was difficult because I have never caught before. But somehow I managed. And when he opened his eyes and saw those two flies in the bottle, he says, now give this bottle to me. I have a girl to those fools. And he was perfectly okay. But it is very difficult to help such people. Very difficult. Because you know that their difficulty is all false. Subhuti is asking, Lord, first tell us how to stand here, because our roots are gone. We don't belong to this world anymore. Our attachments are gone. They are the roots. And how to progress to work, because we now know that this is all just nonsense. People are imagining all their miseries. And how to control thoughts. What he means, because a bodhisattva has no thoughts ordinarily, not the thoughts that you have. Now there is only one thought, and that thought is of the other source. and the other soul continuously pulls, and the door is open, and you can enter into utter bliss, and you are holding yourself on the door, and the door is open. First you were searching for many lives where the door is, then you were knocking and knocking for many lives. Now the door is open, and Buddha says you wait, you remain outside the door. There are many who have to be helped. Naturally, a great desire to enter, a great passion to enter into the door will arise. That's what he is asking. After these words, the Lord said to Subhuti, therefore, Subhuti, listen well and attentively. Someone who has set out in the vehicle of a bodhisattva should produce a thought in this manner. It doesn't look very good in the English translation. The Sanskrit word is chittopad. One should create such a mind, such a decision. One should create such a great decision, determination. Chittopad. In this manner, as many beings as there are in the universe of beings, comprehended under the term beings, all these I must lead to nirvana. Not one or two, Vibhuti, Subhuti, not one or two, but all the beings, men, women, animals, birds, trees, rocks, all the beings in the world, one should create such a determination that I will lead all them to nirvana, into that realm of nirvana which leaves nothing behind. And yet, although innumerable beings have thus been led to nirvana, no being at all has been led to nirvana. That too you have to remember. You should not forget. Otherwise, leading others, you will fall into ignorance again. All the beings have to be led to the other source. And still you have to remember that their miseries are false, so your remedies are also false. And you have to remember that they have no selves, neither you have any self. So don't forget that you are helping people, that you are a great helper, this and that. Otherwise you will fall again. Again you will grow roots on this soul. So two things have to be remembered. You have to remain on this soul with great determination, otherwise you will be pulled by the others. And yet you are not to grow roots again, otherwise you will not be of any help. You will destroy yourself. You will fall into the dream again. And why? If in a bodhisattva the notion of a being should take place, he could not be called a bodhi being. And why? He is not to be called a bodhi being in whom the notion of a self or of a being should take place, or the notion of a living soul or of a person. So you have to remember, Subhuti, two things. One, that you have to lead all the beings to the other soul, and still you have to remember that nobody has a being, neither you nor they. All egos are false and illusory. Go on remembering this, and go on with great determination. Help people to the other source. They are already there, just you have to make them alert and aware. But don't get lost. Don't become a savior. These two things. And again Buddha will repeat in this sutra, the vehicle of the bodhisattva. I would like you all to become bodhisattvas. Enough for today.